any of your suggestions and East Portland plans, because I know they've been experts. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the conversation was how do these benefits accrue to the community? So one thing that government and others have been guilty of in the past is asking our community partners to help us do outreach for free. And frankly, that's not really fair, and it's not within the means of some of the smaller organizations that are truly connected to the community. So I think in terms of sort of who does the work, yes, we would love to figure out a way through the Oversight Committee and through the partnerships we've developed and the ones that we'll develop tomorrow for them to do some of the work directly. And we anticipate that, you know, if we ask them to do that, we need to pay them to do that. I would also make reference to and confess not having a deep knowledge of, but have learned from our partners about the People's Plan, which I think is more along the lines of that comprehensive nature that you were referring to, and I know is coming much more close to fruition. So I would defer to their expertise a bit and how we can mesh. I think that's kind of an open question, is how do we continue to make those connections? You know, so there's the Housing Bureau and PDC, and, you know, there's all this other work that's happening, and for us to be doing it in silos and in isolation would be a real fail.
I appreciate that those answers. $20 million is not enough to do everything that needs to be done. $20 million is a lot of money. And so I'm wondering if a portion of it might be dedicated to having the community hire or the city hire a community advocate like we have in East Portland Action Plan, which, and then maybe some small grants or something where the community themselves would decide how they want to use that. Yeah. It's just they've been able to do in East Portland the East Portland in Motion Plan, which then leveraged a lot of state transportation dollars and other metro funding and such. It's more of a community organizing empowerment mm-hmm. mechanism. And I would encourage you to look at, is there anywhere in any of these allocations that you could have a further discussion with the community about perhaps we don't put all of it into these grants for loans, perhaps a small portion of one of those buckets could get allocated for exactly what you just talked about, Tracy, that not expecting people to do community organizing or outreach for free, and in fact having a dedicated person whose job it is to focus on the interstate urban renewal area, the North Northeast Portland area, and then to do lots of good work in the community, which, you know, the Office of Neighborhood Involvement looks after the contracts and such in the East Portland Action Plan, but most of the work is done in the community by the community for the community.
Yeah, and you know, certainly that's how we work, is most of our money, you know, the $100 million in our budget every year goes directly to the community. We don't do most of the work directly. TIF is tough to spend on staff unless it's directly connected to a project, but I think your call for creativity is heard, and we will take those as marching orders.
Great. Tracy, when we talk about leverage, we've heard that from several people testifying. We're really talking about CDBG, home, other sources of funding that can be leveraged. And so that's part of a larger conversation, because $20 million is a piece, but there's every year we have these allocations. So that's a citywide conversation, because we have policies in place that decide where that money goes. So that's probably the next big part of this discussion, is how we get additional leverage by targeting these other discretionary resources. But that's where the real money is. I mean, obviously in the allocation we get through entitlement or through discretion.
We might also be talking about private philanthropy, which is where there's also some real money that we haven't leveraged enough of in this instance. So.
Yeah, although I would say, Mayor, Tracy Manning has done an extraordinary job with leverage generally. Mm-hmm. I mean, the preservation strategy that she oversaw, our public investment was a very small amount, and the overall leverage of private equity, philanthropy, all these other things was a huge amount. So if anyone knows how to find an extra dollar somewhere, it's Tracy. But the question about matching it with other federal funds is going to be a big question. I hear a number of people saying they want to leverage. I want to go back to the rental housing for a second.
Mm-hmm.
So the community's been clear, and you've been clear, that the rental housing will be targeted to families at 60% medium family income or below.
Correct, yes.
So it'll be the what we call the 30% set-aside guidelines.
Yeah, 60% at the most.
60% at the most. So this is where there's a lot of need, and we've heard repeatedly that, and these are the families priced out of the market right now in the most acute way. Dr. Bethel, you know, in his testimony said, raised again this concern about how we allocate the money. I think the NOFA process that you have refined and developed has been pretty good. And since you have to rank people, you're never the most popular person on the day. You have to tell people they didn't make the cut. And someone, but I'm just interested. Are you thinking about making changes to the NOFA process as part of this? And if so, are those things you're looking at system wide or just for the target area?
Yeah. Yeah, I think we are. We haven't defined particular changes. I think we have heard very clearly, as Reverend Doctor referenced, that you know, and Andrew referenced, it's keeping the benefit of these dollars multiplying, leveraging in the community is really important. And so making sure that those processes, and I saw my team taking notes when Reverend Dr. Bethel was speaking, making sure, you know, who selects and relationships matter, and really prioritizing in this process that depth of experience with this community as a priority. We are, you know, blessed with a lot of development talent and capacity in this community and firms that can do the work. And so asking as part of that, as you really well outlined, accountable and transparent process, how those community connections will help them develop this project, I think, is something that folks have lifted up as a recommendation to us that makes good sense.
So, for example, you might decide that in your new scoring system, extra points if you choose a prime contractor that is minority-owned?
Sure. That would be an example, yes.
I think the Colas Construction Company will be the first prime construction company to have a substantial piece of work on MLK. So that is one way that we move the dial, and we've had some success with subcontracting, but with the contractors, maybe not as much as you would like. So,
yeah, I believe Dawson Park was an excellent example.
Good.
Excellent presentation, excellent discussion. We should move on, I think.
Just a couple questions. One is, do we know what percentage of people who have been displaced were homeowners and how many were renters?
I don't think we know that.
No.
No, I'm getting a lot of head shaking. No, I don't think we know that. I'll see what we can get.
Okay, because my uninformed assumption has been that given, in part, our weird property tax system, even when values go up, property taxes don't drive people out of their homes. So although there are all the predatory lending, et cetera, I kind of assume that more forced relocations were renters rather than owners, but it would be interesting if you have any statistics. The other question, and this will probably come up later because I imagine some of these folks are here and we'll hear from them later, but as you know, we got a letter from a large number of respected organizations and individuals really strongly endorsing the land banking strategy. They didn't put a dollar amount, as I see in the letter, on how much of the $20 million they think should be dedicated to that, but I'm just curious as to whether you've had conversations with them about whether $3 million is an appropriate amount.
I have, I also found that a very compelling letter. I know a lot of those folks as well, and there's others I'm looking forward to working with. So I have had conversations with several, certainly not everybody, who is a signatory to that letter, and they had everywhere from sort of declining to give me a number to very different answers about that number. Some people who signed the letter have seen our recommendation and are okay with it. I think some people, full disclosure, some people are not. They wanted to see more. We do have the decision package, the general fund ask, which I can use that money for leverage, and I find that a lot it's a lot better source, but I completely respect that sentiment, and regardless, really look forward to taking them up on their invitation to working together. I really believe, Dr. Bates has provided us with some studies that demonstrate that there is a really intriguing long-term play there about efforts to mitigate displacement.
Thank you.
And I want to just say this in regard to your question about displacement. Displacement wasn't simply driven by home pricing or taxes. It's also when you begin closing African-American-owned businesses. And so when economics are hit and those who own those businesses no longer have them and pricing is changing, then they can't access that. So what we're talking about is not just a housing issue. We're also talking about economic development. But since this is specifically around housing, that's, you know, what we've got to focus at this moment. There are other elements that we must talk about and think about.
Yeah, and that's why I mentioned PDC earlier, is that we've got to synergize what we're doing here on the housing side with PDC. Even though the two agencies are separate, actually we're creating a working group between the two bureaus to make sure that we know how to get mixed-use projects delivered, even if there's different pots of money being blended in order to make the project happen. Because
yes, sir.
What the community wants is both opportunity for business growth and housing. And frankly, I don't think we have any excuse as a city to only meet one of those objectives, particularly on property that we own.
Agreed. Agreed.
Thank you so much for your leadership on this, Bishop Paul. Great. Well, thank you both. And we'll move on to public testimony.
We have 11 people signed up.
Okay.
The first three, please come on up, are Alyssa Eisenstein Kruger, Tony Jones, and Steve Messineth.
Come on up. Ms. Kruger, I think you're on first. You're close enough, I think.
Close enough, okay. Yeah. My name is Alyssa Eisenstein Kruger. I am a real estate broker with Living Room Realty, and I'm also a partner broker with the Portland Housing Center. I submitted a proposal for increasing home ownership opportunities for people of color in North Northeast Portland, and I wanted to share that. I would like to see $3 million of the $20 million allocated to be used for $35,000 silent loans, which is basically a loan that somebody receives but they don't have to make payments on it, to assist moderate income first-time home buyers with historic ties to the community in purchasing a home in Inner North Northeast Portland. The loans can be used to help with the down payment, closing costs, and needed repairs. And if the home is sold within 5 years of the purchase, a pro rata share of the loan must be repaid by the homeowner. And Portland Housing Center would be the administrator of the loans. Priority for these loans should be given to buyers who can demonstrate three of the following criteria. One is resided 8 out of the last 25 years in Inner Northeast Portland. Those 8 years do not have to be consecutive. Attended either Roosevelt, Jefferson, or Adams High School. They could have, they've completed the Getting Your House in Order class taught at the Portland Housing Center. They are affiliated with or have family affiliations with either a faith-based institution or community-based organization in the URA, and that they make no more than 130% MFI. And additionally, buyers must have asset caps before and after purchase, and that includes liquid and non-liquid funds. And the buyers may receive no additional gift funds for the down payment assistance, and the sales price should be capped. With $20 million in affordable with the $20 million affordable housing initiative in North Northeast Portland earmarked for helping prevent additional displacement of longtime residents and address a long history of institutional racism in the interstate corridor urban renewal area, now is the time to set aside money to be used solely for the purpose of increasing homeownership, particularly among African American families with moderate incomes, between 81% to 120% MFI. Rents are rising at astounding rates, and oftentimes a mortgage payment will be less than what a family pays for rent. Plus, a mortgage payment provides tax benefits that renting does not. Many of the community spoke in the community forum summary that I read. The fact that there is no assistance for folks making over 80% of MFI. I work at Living Room. We did a survey of we have 52 brokers. 26 of our brokers answered the survey. It was how many first-time home buyers had we worked with over the last year? The answer was 148. How many of those use gift funds to buy their home, which is how most first-time home buyers, not most, but a lot, are able to buy in Northeast Portland? The answer was 62, which is 40%. 59 of those 62 were white. The average gift was $42,000, and the average home purchase was $305,000. So I have much more, but I submitted a testimony.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Great. Thanks. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, commissioners, council members. My name is Tony Jones. I'm the executive director of Metropolitan Contractor Improvement Partnership. Our mission is to build the capacity of minority and disadvantaged contractors that face disparity in utilization of contractors in our city and our region. How we do that is we have a plan center that provides information about contracting opportunities. We provide workshops, and we also do one-on-one coaching with those businesses. We work with about 45 contractors a year, and diversity across the board, African-American, Hispanic-American, Native American, Asian, and women. We support the North-Northeast investment strategy to guide the $20 million over 5 years to serve those historically impacted by displacement. I just have a few comments I want to add. I know a lot of comments have already been shared. But we fully support the oversight committee. We encourage them to lead with reviewing best practices that can be used to serve the people that have been impacted by displacement, and the monitoring is extremely important. I want to encourage the Portland Housing Bureau to also make sure that their staff is trained, so as they are working with developers, contractors that may want to utilize these dollars, that they understand the real intent of these dollars. This is just not another buck to build another piece of housing. And one of the things that I think is really important with this oversight committee combined with the council is, frankly, having some sanctioning power. Really, it is important to make sure if you're going to set these goals, they need to be met. And if they're not met, consequences need to be had. And the goal really is to take a positive approach to make sure that these things happen. But if they're not happening, we need to stop and see that we're not meeting the goal and address what the challenge is to meet the goals that are set out. The other thing I want to encourage is that the Housing Bureau consider with these dollars to increase the utilization goal to somewhere in between 30 to as high as 50%. I know that there are some projects, particularly that are of the scale and in the location of Northeast Portland that have been done recently that have been able to achieve those utilization goals. I know PCRI, in their recent homeowner renovation project, they've achieved those goals, as well as Innovative Housing on their Erickson Fritz renovation are achieving those type of goals. We also want to talk about specific MBE targets, because we think if you're targeting African Americans, you got to talk about that you're targeting minorities and not emerging small businesses. And as Andrew talked about, there are MBEs that are capable of doing the work. One of the things that is a best practice is when an organization like ourselves or other organizations work in collaboration with the Bureau and the contractor to help bring other emerging contractors to these opportunities to do the work. So these are some suggestions and recommendations of how to move forward and achieve equity. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mayor Hales, commissioners, thank you for your careful work on this issue and ongoing commitment to helping Portland become a city where everyone has a decent and affordable place to live, which is, in fact, the mission of the organization I represent. I'm Steve Messinetti. I'm the director of Habitat for Humanity here in Portland. Habitat, between 1990 and 2002, built 110 houses in this North-Northeast focus area that the study focused on. And those 110 houses went to families who, on average, earned about 40% of the median income. Over 80% of those were minority households. And I'm proud to share that most of those families are still in those homes. In fact, as I was walking out the door at 1 o'clock today, Alice Green walked into my office, and she was there. I recognized her. She bought her home about 20 years ago from Habitat, and she was there to make her final mortgage payment. Mm-hmm. And I asked her what her plans were, and she said she's never planning to leave. She loves her home, and she plans to stay. Homeownership is the most effective anti-displacement tool. And I'm here to share that homeownership can be a solution to break the equity imbalance in our city. And even very low-income households, for very low-income households, this is possible. And we need to continue to find a way to create more opportunities for households of color to buy homes. It is time to end this racial disparity between those who own property and therefore have the decision-making and power that comes with that and those who don't, especially now that our city is made up of over 50% people of color, young people of color in our schools. I've been the Habitat Director for about 10 years now, and in those 10 years, our city has seen a 65% increase in house costs, which put us in the top 10 in the country of most, the highest increase in house prices. Homeownership is becoming more and more out of reach, which makes it even more important for us to act now as it becomes more and more difficult to close the minority homeownership gap. I applaud this proposal and recommend it, especially the commitment of 25% of these funds to help people buy homes, as the typical annual city budget on housing allocates about 3% for this purpose. And the great thing about funding homeownership is that it not only helps the family that's being served with those funds, but it moves a family out of a rental unit that is freed up. Typically, in our case, it's a rental unit that's subsidized, that there's a long waiting list to get into. So you're really serving two homes for every one that you support through homeownership. I encourage you to support this proposal, but also to consider funding homeownership as other opportunities arise.
Thank you. Thanks for the work your organization does. Thank you. Thank all three of you very much. Okay, the next, please.
Are Diane Lynn, Ruth Adkins, and Lightning.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Diane.
Good afternoon, Mayor, members of City Council. It's great to be here with you today. I'm going to jump right in. I'm Diane Lynn. I'm Executive Director of Proud Ground. We're formerly Portland's Community Land Trust organization established by the City of Portland 15 years ago. And I've also been involved with Steve Messinetti and others to help facilitate what we call the Partners for Affordable Home Ownership. So we're all working together to talk about this question of leverage and how we really get the biggest bang for the buck with the community. I want to start by thanking Commissioner Saltzman, his staff, your staff, Mayor, the members of the staff of the Bureau, and the community leaders you've heard from today have been incredibly eloquent in explaining the critical importance of this issue going forward. The proposed investment in homeownership, as Steve just referenced, from the resources promised to the community and together with the housing resources from the URA, the set-aside, is an extraordinary move in the right direction. Commitment to the rental units is also helpful. And together, as Steve mentioned, there's real hope for support of a continuum of housing that's more holistic. We look forward to working with you, the city, to implement these measures if passed, and want to continue to discuss the highest and best targeted use of these critical and precious public resources. We are very hopeful that, in fact, we can focus more on the permanently affordable component, as I think Commissioner Fish referenced, as did Commissioner Fritz, that really we can, in fact, achieve families that will build more wealth, save money along the way, as Tracy mentioned, and also save that asset for the next family down the line, whether it's 5, 10, 15, 20, or 50 years down the line. So these neighborhoods can stay economically diverse going forward, and we can really commit those public resources to that long-term leverage. Elements of this proposal, from funding the home buyer assistance to land acquisition and new development, keeping people in their homes, also very important. Obviously here to support this proposal, but I want to take just a minute to share with you a letter from one of the homeowners, an African-American single mom, who, and I'm going to paraphrase thanks to the time we have here today, but she walked into the Portland Housing Bureau, Housing Center in 2008 and was scared to death that she had no chance of homeownership in a million years. She left there and came back 3 years later. Long story short, as of November 2014, she now lives in a 3-bedroom, 2.5-bath home purchased through Proud Ground, a home where her monthly mortgage is less than the rent on her one-bedroom one-bath apartment where there was no electrical outlet in her bathroom and mold growing around the place. I wish she could be here with you today because she's, is that it in terms of timing? Just wanted to share with you that I wish you could hear her voice about what the dream of home ownership means to her, her family, her grandchildren, and she would tell you that if she was here, you would see her tears and her trembling voice to explain the importance of home ownership to her and her family and the cycle of poverty that's broken in her case. I think we're on the right track with this, and I look very much forward to answering your questions about the role of the Community Land Trust in the conversation.
Diane, it's very nice to have you back in town.
Thank you, Stephen.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. For the record, my name is Ruth Adkins. I'm with the Oregon Opportunity Network, and we're a statewide association of affordable housing and community development nonprofits, including 19 member organizations here in the Portland area, Proud Ground and Habitat among them. So Oregon On just wanted to chime in to add our strong support and thanks for this investment strategy. We really appreciate the community outreach that went into developing this strategy and the city's efforts to address the impacts of displacement and systemic racism. We're really pleased to see the variety of approaches in this plan, including the range of homeownership strategies, land banking, as well as the multifamily development. It's really important, as Diane mentioned, to have that entire continuum. Like everyone else, we want to thank the commissioner, the mayor, Tracy and her staff, and the entire community for all the good work that went into this. This plan to invest in the desperately needed affordable housing and homeowner support in North and Northeast. As everyone has said, as so much damage has already been done, this still is a really crucial opportunity to help mitigate the devastating impacts of displacement, and we share the urgency in getting the investment into the community as soon as possible. As always, we urge the city to work closely with community partners as you move into the details of implementation. It's vital to stay in touch and be ready to make adjustments as you go, as needed. Our members are mission-driven nonprofits working in the community, and we all want to see the best and most effective use of this new investment in housing opportunity. And then finally, just to step back to the larger picture citywide, we believe and we hope you do as well that the city's affordable housing portfolio is an important public asset and part of our public infrastructure. We recognize that unlike our parks and roads, the PHB portfolio is not wholly owned by the city, but the portfolio does represent a significant public investment in and a vital commitment to our collective goal of ensuring that all Portlanders of all income levels have a place to call home. So as we move into budget season, just wanted to thank you for your past and urge your continued support for budget investments and policy in support of housing opportunity. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Ruth, I also want to just thank you. In the fall, you took a crack at looking at how to extend our discount program to low-income renters as the Water Bureau's discount program, and that just fired up again yesterday.
Right.
And the groundwork which you laid is informing this new process of how can we get those discounts to more people, but particularly to people who live in apartment buildings that are low income, but for the fact they don't have a separate meter and don't get a bill, would be eligible for the discount program. So we hope to get that right, but we thank you for the groundwork that you laid for that discussion.
Well, thanks for your leadership. We really appreciate it.
Questions for these two experts while we've got them? More questions for you later. I mean, the leverage question is one that we'll keep throwing back up in the air.
I have one question for Diane.
More.
Steve's been on the council a couple of years. You know, we have our good days and our bad days. What was he like when he worked for you?
Don't get me started.
Take the fifth. Okay.
But I'm very glad to be home.
That. Yeah, take the fifth.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next, please.
Are Lori Benoit, John Mulvey, and Barry Joe Stoll.
Come on up. Welcome back.
Yes, thank you. Lori Benoit. Diane Lynn is actually a friend of mine from grade school. We lived less than 30 seconds from each other here in Portland, inner Portland. I lived in Buckman, and she did as well. I also lived in North Portland. And in all these years, I've seen a big change in Portland, on this side, Portland downtown, all the way east side. And what I've seen is I've seen a remarkably increase in the amount of people that are homeless. For the nation, there's more than 33% emergency housing In Portland, there's less than 10%, and I believe that that's a correct amount. We need to do something to help the homeless population. We have all kinds of needs. Housing is a big one, but I would hope that something would be set from this $20 million for this particular population. I, in the last year, and Diane Lynn also, her family over the years has also had homeless people with them. I also, my own home, my homes, have had homeless people. Over the last year, I've had five people that are homeless. They have nowhere, no money, nowhere to go. And so, you know, I keep seeing this over and over again. We need to address this and help these people with this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your personal commitment as well.
Yes.
Good afternoon, John.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and members of the council. My name is John Mulvey. I came to Portland 22 years ago, and at that point, it was a real affordable city. It was easy to get around. It had an amazing egalitarian mix of incomes in many of the neighborhoods. It was just a wonderful place, and that's why I stayed. One of my first jobs was with a prominent local real estate development company, and in that job I worked on developing projects, condominium projects in the Pearl, as well as master planning for the South Waterfront project, which we then called North Macadam. Back then, there was a lot of talk in Portland about livability and compact growth, alternative transportation, walkable neighborhoods. I'm sure you all remember that. Fast forward to today, these things are hallmarks of what Portland's all about for some people. Increasingly, these things aren't available to everyone. We're in very real danger of becoming a city with an inner enclave of wealthy people and an outer layer where low-income people live. And it would be a tragedy to allow that to happen. This is a real critical question for, I think, today's leaders in Portland. Was all the talk about livability 10 and 15 years ago, was that a marketing pitch for million-dollar condos? Or was it something more meaningful than that that would be extended to everybody in the community? The city's really done a terrible job in the intervening time of making that livability agenda meaningful for people at all income levels. So I'd ask the council really to recommit to making Portland livable and affordable for everyone. That doesn't just mean adopting the plan that's in front of you today. Although I very much support it, and I hope you will too. It also means taking meaningful steps to address the skyrocketing costs of housing in the private rental market, which is where the vast majority of low-income Portlanders get their housing. That means supporting an aggressive inclusionary zoning policy. It means meaningful protection for renters in condo conversions. And finally, it means joining nearly every progressive city in this country and instituting a real rent control ordinance. Portland's really at a critical juncture right now, and I hope you will fight for the city that I know we all love so much, because it's really at a tipping point where it could go one direction or the other. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Mr. Stull, welcome.
Council, my name is Barry Joe Stull. This month, both Mayor Hales and Chair Kefouri cringed when I again raised the issue of PCRI's vacant affordable housing five-apartment complex at 4066 Northeast Grand Avenue. Unfortunately, body language isn't enough to change this situation, and the organized crime I've been exposed to and have exposed. On a recent trip to the Multnomah County Courthouse, I saw Multnomah County Sheriff Civil Unit Deputy Hughes, who testified on July 13, 2007. I'd warned him in October 2006 PCRI was going to again destroy my goods, which PCRI had done by then in October 2006, in the amount of $4,775 in musical instruments and tools. I told Deputy Hughes PCRI got away with it. This whole matter exemplifies government corruption and PCRI's continuing abuses. Among the documents I've shared as PDF files is a certified copy of the entire case file scanned by Portland City Council Clerk Carla over here in 2010, which includes Dr. Grimm's diagnosis of my having severe pain and severe nausea, and Judge Weisberg's October 2006 order stating the contempt of court proceedings could be reopened if PCRI failed to promptly act in good faith to compensate me for the goods removed and destroyed improperly, which PCRI had its insurance provider issue a check for $4,775 in 2010. Hardly either good faith or prompt. It was also insurance fraud on the part of PCRI. I'm not one to accept my experience in the current vacant status of the entire complex named Kafori Court as being what PCRI claims through its motto, meeting the affordable housing needs of the community. I don't believe the community accepts it either. Continuing, here's an email I sent to Ms. Manning. It's Portland Housing Bureau and PCRI Partnership. It's to Ms. Manning, Ms. Callahan, and the Community Alliance of Tenants. Since everyone knows about this issue already, I'm making it clear everyone knows the Portland Housing Bureau is partnering with the corrupt nonprofit PCRI. The attached materials serve to exemplify why we have people sleeping in doorways in Portland while affordable housing is vacant. PCRI destroyed over $20,000 of my goods in two episodes in 2006 as I was appealing a so-called 30-day no-cause eviction. I came home from work and found I'd been locked out of the apartment by PCRI in violation of a stay pending appeal, as determined by the Oregon Court of Appeals. After PCRI took about a week to destroy my goods in March 2006, PCRI did it again in October 2006. I see I'm running out of time, so I'll cut to the chase. On October 30th, 2014, Nicole Prey, an employee of the neighboring Providence Elder Place in Irvington Village, told me that during the 3 years she has worked there, the five-apartment complex at 4066 Northeast Grand Avenue has never housed a tenant. By my calculation, PCRI has failed to collect well over $75,000 in rent for that five-apartment complex at 4066 Northeast Grand at a time folks can't find housing and their Section 8 vouchers expire. We had Crystal Alinsky here this morning say she's got a Section 8 voucher. She can't get into housing. You're partnering with PCRI. We heard Maxine Fitzpatrick's name mentioned twice at least today. These people are absolutely corrupt. Chief of Police, are you still over there? Go get him, Tiger.
Thank you, Mr. Stahl. All right, next three, please.
Okay, Mayor, we do celebrate the First Amendment in this body.
We do.
But when people come forth and make reckless charges that impugn the integrity of people that we partner with, I think we have to call that out and ask for some decorum. And if someone makes a claim that you're finished, sir. If someone makes a claim
you are
of illegal,
finished,
you are finished.
You're finished.
If someone makes... You're finished. If someone makes a claim that someone is engaged in illegal behavior, then they should be required to present that evidence to either you or the police chief.
There's a process.
And to document it.
Right. Go do that. All right, let's call the next three.
The last two who signed up were Crystal Ilinski and Sarah Long.
And one more arrival.
We have somebody else who wanted to speak as well.
I think Mr. Johnson wants to speak. Go ahead. You're up next. While they're coming up.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Charles Johnson, and I think the issue has been, adequately discussed, and we're all looking forward to stronger action to assure that people who traditionally have strong ties to these neighborhoods are able to maintain and increase home ownership there. But I was recently distressed with the elected government officials' response to the last citizen. Many of us know, this issue of this particular property has been addressed by Mr. Stahl before, and we've never heard actual accountability. We've heard you try and silence people, but we never hear real answers from you. So if you don't have anything to tell us about why the property is empty or how it's not empty or all the other wonderful things PCRI is doing, then just stay shut up, please.
Thanks. Good afternoon.
City Council members, it is an honor to sit before you today. My name is Sarah Long, and I live in Elliott, the historically black neighborhood, where people of color and families of color are disproportionately impacted by the massive loss of affordable housing. I am part of the unpaid, all-volunteer grassroots group United Neighborhoods for Reform. Our concern is the destruction of sound, livable, and affordable housing to be replaced with a single house that is 2 to 3 times as much in price as the original. Normal people attempting to buy a home cannot compete with developers who often buy before the house was ever listed or outbid regular families looking to buy and pay cash. Generally speaking, if there is room for 2 houses after demolition, there was room for 2 houses before, whether next to the existing house or behind it while sharing the driveway as an easement. We do know the reason that they are the existing house is removed, though. The new houses are both, if there are 2 of them, hundreds of thousands of dollars more expensive than the original homes were. Those original homes have now been lost forever, the vast majority of which have been dumped into a landfill. A much better way would be to find a means to stem the tide of needless demolitions of affordable housing in our inner neighborhoods. Just here in Oregon, the cities of Ashland and Corvallis have found a way to stop the destruction of affordable houses, and we can follow their lead. We have an under-discussed means in place to vastly increase our affordable rental housing, and that is accessory dwelling units, or ADUs. We are already charging no system development fees until July 2016 for ADUs. That lowers the total cost around 10%. Promoting ADUs would help lower-income homeowners pay their mortgages, keep them from losing their homes, and massively increase density in those inner neighborhoods that are most afflicted by destruction of affordable housing. We could effectively nearly double our density in areas with single-family homes. We have other green and progressive cities, such as Berkeley, to look to as an example of how great the promotion of ADUs could turn out to be. And I guess that's all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Barbara Kerr. And I also work with United Neighborhoods for Reform, but I also lived in the Humboldt neighborhood for many years and started a business there. And my concern is, as I drive down Williams or MLK, I just want to cry because it's gone, and the community's gone. And I feel like the problem is that we are just physically removing it. And even with the $20 million going in and talking about building new buildings, you are removing the sense of community. Maintaining the community's connection with their history by not destroying their architectural fabric. When you remove the architectural fabric, the homes, the generations of families and neighbors grew up in, the businesses that they frequented and worked in, you remove the story that supports their sense of community, and that's what provides stability. Changing the fabric by building new, removing the sense that things can last, removing the sense that a community can last. It has been there and it will be there, is different than, oh, gee, it's all new now. Supporting people in repairing their homes and finding ways to boost their financial stability with ADUs and other alternate ways of housing can provide a win-win. You won't lose the community. You will allow people to stay, and you will allow them to maintain their dignity in that's their community, not something that somebody came in and handed them some money to build. It's just one more. I mean, sometimes I feel like I've lived too long. It's one more government program that came into Albina and said, look, this is what we want to do. And you're working with the members of the community. I think that's fantastic. But please don't forget that those buildings, for as material as they are, represent their history. And I've seen the African-American community meet some incredible challenges in those buildings, and I hate for them to lose that reminder. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Others that are signed up to speak?
That's all who have signed up.
Anyone else would like to speak on this? Any questions for staff?
Mayor, I move the report.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any more discussion? Then a roll call to accept the report, please.
Fritz?
Well, Mayor and Commissioner Saltzman, congratulations on having brought this report with such a high degree of support voiced from the community. Thank you to the community members who took time out of your busy schedules to be here today, and for all of the work that you and the Housing Bureau staff have done to bring something good out of the controversy from last year. And thanks especially to the Portland African American Leadership Forum, both the current director and the previous leaders, who have taken ownership of helping, working with the city to help find solutions. So certainly we're not there yet, but the fact that we've had this constructive, focused discussion on accepting that our previous policies have not had the outcomes that were desired and how do we change that has been hugely helpful. So thank you very much for that and for this work. With the support of the community, I'm glad to vote aye.
Fish.
Thank you, Mayor, for your leadership on this. Thank you, Dan and the Housing Bureau, for the process you set up and this report and this presentation. And Bishop Holt, who reminded me that last time I met him was at the funeral of a police officer, of a great activist in our community who worked with gang-affected youth, Rob Ingram. Thank you, sir, for your leadership. We're lucky to have you in this work. And I'm looking at the page in the PowerPoint where you began about a backward glance and a forward look. My experience has been we've spent more time on the backward glance than the forward look. And we have to do the backward glance because that's our history. But we're paralyzed if we don't have the forward look, if we don't act. And you've given us a path to action. And I hope it's successful because I think if it's successful, we can make the case for more investments. So thank you, sir, and thanks to a great team. And Dan, this is work that you care deeply about. Even when you weren't the housing commissioner, you managed to build housing in Inner Northeast because you were so passionate. And your value system and your record is well established. So thank you. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I'd like to thank Mayor Hales for his commitment to addressing displacement and for backing up that commitment with some tangible resources to bring more affordable housing to North and Northeast Portland. I want to thank all of our panelists today for taking time out of their days to come here and share their ideas about the solutions we're proposing and also advocating for additional solutions and being willing to assist us in developing policies to help us to begin to turn the tide on this table. I want to thank all the members of our community who attended the community meetings that were held by the Housing Bureau, and I certainly want to thank the Portland Housing Bureau staff who worked tirelessly to pull off these community forums and that were very successful and very well attended. So I want to thank each and every one of them, not only for the work they've done, but for the future work they will do in making these strategies come to life. Special thanks to Tracy Manning, Bishop Stephen Holt, Carl Dinkelspiel, Leslie Goodlow, and Andrea Mathiasen, Javier Mena, Nate McCoy, Martha Calhoun, all with the Housing Bureau. And with my office, special thanks to Shannon Callahan and Brendan Finn for all their tireless work as well. Please to vote aye.
Novick.
I too would like to thank Mayor Hales and Commissioner Saltzman and PALF and all of the other organizations engaged in this spirited discussion and thank Tracy Manning. Earlier today, Commissioner Britt said that we have huge deficits in four major areas in the city, in transportation, in emergency preparedness, in parks maintenance, and in housing. And this morning, we took a small step towards potentially in the future addressing some of the deficits in transportation and parks and emergency preparedness. It's wonderful to see this kind of investment in housing and this kind of thoughtful discussion of how to spend the money. One thing I just wanted to note is we met with some legislators this morning, and we, among them, Speaker Kotek, and the first subject that she brought up was inclusionary zoning, and I really hope that they will have that as a tool after this legislative session, and that that can be used to prevent future further gentrification and displacement. So let's keep our eyes on that as well as what we can do here at home. Aye.
Hales.
Well, I want to talk about what we're doing and then also how we're doing it. I mean, what we're doing is really a piece of what must be a larger, more comprehensive strategy about righting some of those wrongs of the past and creating the community that we want. But there's a way we do things in Portland, and I think today's hearing and the process that led up to this decision today really illustrates that. And one is we really invite the community in to make policy. Yes, the five of us have to try to set a vision for the city, and we have to try to align our values as we understand them from the community into the work that we do. But there was a very robust community process in this case, and that was very important, and I'll get back to that. Then secondly, we align our investments to that vision, and this is exactly what we're doing here. We find the means, public, private, nonprofit, and align them. And then we use partnerships to get things done and to expand our effort. So, policy that's visionary but informed by the community, investments that are aligned with that policy, and then partnerships to make it happen. I think that's a formula that we've shown works in Portland for lots of things, and we're trying to make it work here. Both Commissioner Saltzman and I had the opportunity, along with Jillian Detweiler on my staff and the other folks that have been mentioned, both from Dan's office and from the Bureau, to attend those community meetings. And one of the couple things that struck me about those discussions, one, there were a lot of people in the room that were passionate about this issue but weren't necessarily insiders to these discussions. And I don't mean that with any disrespect to all of us who are insiders. But I thought that was very healthy, that there were a whole bunch of people in the room who had been personally affected by these issues and who wanted something done. And the question that they had for me and for Bishop Holt and for Tracy was, is this real? You know, if I show up and tell you what's happened in my life and ask you to make a strategy that will make a difference, is there any chance that what I'm saying here will make a difference? And I know you felt the imperative of that just like I did. And I think we can say today that we are delivering on that promise, that this package has really been shaped by a very legitimate process in which hundreds of Portlanders who aren't insiders got to have their say about what we do. And I know there are a lot of people here on this dais that want to see that in lots of different formats, and I saw it here. And so I want to commend Bishop Holt and Tracy and all the others who invited people in and then actually heard from them. And for me, that just reinforces the mandate that we really make this work. So thank you all for a job well done so far. Hi. Thank you all very much. We'll take a momentary recess and then take up our last item today.
Nice job.